Welcome, everyone, to the Nomad on Fire podcast, the show all about the digital nomad lifestyle coupled with financial independence. We'll also be exploring tips and tricks on other lifestyle optimization strategies. I'm your host, Eric. Thanks for being here. Let's jump right in. All right, Patrick Strub, welcome to the Nomad on Fire podcast.
Thanks very much. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be talking to you. You are a retirement planning expert and a best-selling author. So this should be a lot of fun and some great takeaways for the listeners. So I guess with that, if you don't mind, can you kind of tell us just about your background and what your story is?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born and raised in Indiana and loved it other than the cold and decided I desperately wanted to get out. So when I graduated, I had from college, I had no idea what I wanted to do, and really just am blessed to have stumbled into financial planning. Moved down to Columbia, South Carolina in 2003 and started my own practice. And just passionate about financial planning, about investing, tax planning, retirement, whatever that means to each person, helping people accomplish their financial goals. And I've written two books now, almost a decade ago, which amazes me. I wrote Save Your Retirement, which is kind of a comic book, superheroes and villains themed finance book. And then I just recently wrote The Retirement Secret. So the first one is kind of comprehensive planning ideas. Second one more geared towards investment planning.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. Let's start with the books. What can you kind of, I guess, two questions in one. Can you kind of tell us, you know, what was your inspiration for writing the book? And I did, I thought it was kind of cool that it's told in more of a story format. So I guess let's just one question. We'll start with just what was the inspiration for writing the book?
Yeah, I was getting nervous to have to remember both things, right? Well, I will tell you that I think it's just having a passion for what we do. You know, writing a book is just a way to get information out. And I thought I have been doing this now for a couple decades, and I just know our education system, for all its benefits, doesn't provide a lot of explanation of finance or, you know, retirement or accomplishing your financial goals or anything like that. So I've just experienced a lot of meeting a lot of people that are confused and scared. And I thought, hey, if I can get a book out there, that could be really beneficial. The style came completely by accident. I wrote my first chapter. I walked away. I thought it was pretty good. I came back and read it and I thought, oh my goodness, this is the most boring thing I've ever read in my life. So I said that I've got to figure something else out. And so I was just kind of brainstorming, came up with this idea of having seven villains of retirement, you know, things like longevity and outliving your money and things like that. And then more important than that, addressing what are the ways to protect yourself from those villains. So that's where it came from. It's not a hoity-toity book by any means. It's much more a down-to-earth way to, you know, I think people that are really into investments and finance can get a lot out of it, but it is really meant for normal human beings that don't, you know, have finance as a hobby, that are kind of even maybe scared or intimidated by it.
Very cool. Okay. And then you said The Retirement Secret is more focused on like the investment piece of it. What are some of those like principles or some of the things that you recommend in that book?
Yeah. So The Retirement Secret came about because I just feel like investing is just overwhelming to so many people. And as I'm sure you know, it's, you know, it's in the news all the time. It's people obsess over it and talk about, you know, whatever the investment of the day is, whether it used to be the stock market and then it was GameStop and then Bitcoin. And then it's, you know, it kind of fluctuates all over the place and people get obsessed with these ideas. And, we have this human nature of this greed of not wanting to miss out on, you know, something running up. And then we have this fear and panic when things are dropping. So our emotions make it so difficult to actually be successful. So this book talks about first kind of principles of thinking about what's important about investing to you. And then secondly, kind of breaks down, really just tries to look at all of the places you can put your money and kind of categorize them in simple ways. So once again, it's not so overwhelming. It's a little more understandable.
For sure. When you were writing these books, I definitely wanted to ask you about like your writing process. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah. A lot of trial and error, learning from my own mistakes, I would say. The two things that have worked for me, someone told me very early in my career that they believed everyone has a book in them, which I thought was really cool. I think helped motivate me to give it a shot. Cause I certainly wasn't interested in writing in high school or college or anything mm-hmm. like that. I was the numbers guy. The two things that have worked really well for me that I think can translate to a lot of others. The first one is the only places I figured out I could not work on my book were my home and my office, because there's just too much going on, too much distraction, too much of life. Mm-hmm. And so just literally being anywhere else, the coffee shop or library or, you know, something like that. And then the second thing is that I think is a very powerful idea is if there's any way to talk part of the book, that was a game changer for me. If I just sit down at my computer with a Word document that's blank, I'm completely overwhelmed and terrified of that process. But so for me, I have, I have a local radio show here. So I had a recording of an hour show transcribed. So that kind of gave me a starting point for The Retirement Secret. And then we teach classes sometimes to people in person. So I had one of those classes, which was about an hour transcribed for my first book. Now that it needs a lot of work, certainly. And if the transcriber is not very nice, they leave the ums and the ahs in there. So it makes you feel kind of silly when you're actually going through it. But that's my personality. My goodness, how much easier is it to work off of a starting point as opposed to just a blank page?
Absolutely. I think those are some great tips. I really like what you said about kind of changing the setting. If you know that home or office, there's too many other things going on, you kind of have that place where you can go and focus and get some stuff knocked out on it. How about in terms of like daily cadence? Are you one of those people where, every day at 8 a.m., if you're working on a book, then it's heads down, focus on it? Or is it kind of just as you're able to find time? Or how does that look?
That's a great question. I've dabbled with various approaches. I do think we all have kind of that daily rhythm where we all have times where we have more energy and less energy. And certainly attempting to write a book for me needs to be high energy time because it's just not something I can fall into naturally. So it was kind of a, I'm married and I have two young kids. So it was kind of, giving them a kiss on the cheek, leaving the house and then getting somewhere as fast as possible and starting my day that way. So the most recent book was definitely kind of a coffee shop in the morning. Try and get there as early as I can and get some done and then kind of get into the office at a reasonable hour. So to try and keep everyone's expectations low, I usually didn't tell my wife where I was going and I didn't tell anyone at the office where I was coming from. So that was another thing that worked for me. I didn't want anyone constantly asking me, when's the book going to be done? When's the book going to be done?
That's good though. I've seen some stuff about just like not, kind of relating it to like social media and stuff in this day and age. Like a lot of people talk about, oh, I'm going to do this thing. And they get like all the credit and praise for it up front of like, oh, that's awesome that you're going to run a marathon or you're going to lose 20 pounds, but you haven't like put in any work, right? Where it can be so beneficial to like not share what you're working on and just heads down, grind it out and then accomplish it and then can celebrate.
It's one of those things we all know, is something really significant in your life doesn't come easy and it takes time. In most things like that don't happen as fast as you want them to. So I would hate to say, hey, this book's going to be coming out and I expect it to happen in 3 months. And then 3 months later, you're on chapter two and you're thinking, why did I say that?
Very cool. Well, yeah, congratulations. The Retirement Secret just came out a few months ago. Is that right?
It did, yeah. And we've been really excited by the response. We were able to hit number one in our category and have had great feedback on it. So that's obviously the most exciting part for us.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I'll link up both the books in the show notes so anyone listening can check them out. So
great.
Cool. Wanted to shift gears a little bit. You kind of mentioned, I wanted to ask you about your radio show. Can you tell the listeners what your show is about?
Yeah, it's called Save Your Retirement. It was actually called something else. And then we reached enough visibility online that a very large financial institution sent me a cease and desist letter. So I didn't realize it was a trademark name. So that was not intentional. But so we named it after the book. We just spend an hour a week talking about mostly retirement related issues, investing, accomplishing your goals, tax planning. We talk about those villains. How do we make sure we never run out of money? How do we protect ourselves as things get more expensive over time when there's inflation? How do we make sure we're not paying unnecessary taxes? As we get older, if we have more healthcare needs, how do we handle that? How do we manage those costs? You know, all those things that our realities in life, and just trying to talk through those solutions, because it's just all about getting information out there to us.
For sure. What are some of those retirement villains that people should be aware of and watch out for?
Yeah, a couple of them I always say go hand in hand are inflation and longevity. And for the sake of keeping it true to the book. So the longevity is Lady Longevity in the book. And then I called inflation the invisible enemy, which I got my wrist slapped by my, hired a cartoonist to draw everyone out for the book. And he said, well, how am I supposed to draw something that's invisible? That doesn't make any sense. So we figured it out. But the reason those are so important together is depending on what type of lifestyle or how early you want to retire, we all have the same concern. How do I make sure I never run out of money? Right. And you think of maybe a generation or two ago, maybe someone worked for the same employer their whole life. They got the gold watch, they got their pension and Social Security, and they just kind of sat back in the rocker and relaxed. And guess what? That's not life for any of us. Right. And you know, that may not be what our listeners want. but it's trying to make sure, you have enough money to last as long as you last. And then, the tricky thing then is things tend to get more expensive over time. And that's something that's certainly being talked about a lot right now. Hey, are things going to start getting a lot more expensive? How do we combat that? And those go together, right? So if someone wants to retire at 65 and they're going to live 20 or 30 years, that's one risk. If someone wants to stop working at 55, 45, or 35, that's obviously a longer time frame and that compounds. So those are a couple of the things that we just want to be aware of. You know, there's no magic solution to that. It's just making sure those things are being considered when you're trying to map out your goals and what you want to accomplish.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that inflation piece a little bit more if we can. That definitely has been a hot button topic recently. What are some of your thoughts on inflation? Where do you think we're heading in the next few months to a year?
Concerned, I think.
Yeah.
I think the two that I would tie together right now are inflation and taxes. When you have this kind of mentality by the government or politicians that you can just kind of create a debt that's just exploding, that's never worked in the history of mankind. So what's going to solve that, or what are going to be the results of that? And most people that are way smarter than I am would say, you know, looking at history, there's either going to be inflation because you're printing so much money, and or you're going to have to raise tax rates a lot to help combat this, you know, growing debt. And if there's inflation, if interest rates start rising, that means the interest on the debt gets worse and worse. And it's kind of this scary cycle that starts to happen. So it is something that we are concerned about. I will say I'm 47 now, and I've learned from mistakes in the past not to make bold predictions of the future, because right, things don't always go as we expect. But yeah, I know I can imagine, you know, your thoughts on that. I think it's just it is a concerning time right now. And it's ultimately what we preach is we want you to help figure out what your goals are. And we want you to be responsible. You know, we need to be responsible for ourselves and accomplishing what we want to do financially, because who knows, you know, what the security of the government or you know, any of those promises are.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What can you, you know, I guess, what can you do to kind of shield yourself a little bit? Say inflation starts to really take off. What types of assets can you be in to maybe mitigate the loss a little bit?
Yeah, I think a couple of things I would say, if you don't mind, I'll kind of answer it in two steps. And I promise I'll actually specifically answer your question. The first one is starting off and making sure you understand what your goals are. Because when you need your money to work for you is what matters most. And that's where we get frustrated, because as human beings, you hear, well, so-and-so is making 25% a year on his money, you know, in whatever cryptocurrency or whatever's happening. And, you know, I've got my money in the bank or in a bond making 2% or something like that. And so we have the greed glands going on. But we always preach it. Rate of return isn't the most important thing. The most important thing is you accomplish your goals, right? That's what matters. And so if someone wants to work until they're 80 and then have a bunch of money, that's fine if that's their goal. If someone wants to retire as fast as they possibly can, then that's their goal. So that's the first step. And how inflation ties into that depends on your goals, right? And so then the second thing, to come back to your specific question, the thing that we look at is if there are inflationary times that will typically affect interest rates, meaning rates will start coming up. So the balancing act that we look at as what seems typically more appealing, real estate is an area that we like in inflation. And for the simple fact that as things get more expensive, real estate costs more, it tends to drive up values. It seems like we are in an economy where the areas of real estate that will continue to do well seem pretty clear. You know, if you're looking to buy a home and flip it or something like that, you can understand the markets there. If you're looking at more professionally invested portfolios, we think distribution and warehouse, you know, at the Amazons of the world, we all know that's where things are going to continue to go. They don't have enough supply right now to keep up with that. So that's a good sign as far as investing. The other area that's really interesting is apartment complexes. The younger generation, a lot of them don't care about owning a home or having to deal with that. And so there's a lot of demand there. Interestingly, the fastest growing market for apartment complexes is baby boomers, as they're kind of actually seeing it. It's surprising to most people, surprising to me too. But they're kind of saying, hey, to heck with all this maintenance, let's just go live our life in our apartment and enjoy life. So there's a good supply and demand mix there. And then the on the opposite end, the one area we're most concerned about would be bonds. In the good old days of the 80s and 90s, someone might want to put some money in bonds and get a 6 or 7 or 8% dividend to live off of. Now the rates are near zero, and if interest rates start to go up, then the value of bonds would drop. So that's an area where in the good old days, 20 or 30 years ago, maybe people would consider it safe, but we think there's probably some risk there.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for sharing those, like, specifically in terms of the real estate for like, if people want to get invested in that without, you know, a lot of like extra work, do you recommend like REITs for that? Is that how they could get invested in some of those like commercial type properties?
Yeah. The interesting thing about real estate is there's so many ways to do it, and it's kind of, it can make your head spin a little bit. So there's obviously you can, if you have the funding too, you can own it directly, of course, like owning your home or owning an investment property. Having it professionally managed would typically, there's actually a couple of ways you could do it. One would be a REIT, which REITs are awesome. That stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. There's a lot of great things about a REIT. The one downside is they are quote unquote publicly traded. So it works a lot like a stock. So you have a lot of the benefits of owning real estate. You can generate income from it, which is from the rent. And the values can go up, which they historically do over time. The downside is if we run into a 2008, when the stock market crashes and the real estate market crashes, guess what? Your REIT's probably going to go crashing down. So that's the downside. So there's, one of the things we always say is there's no such thing as a perfect investment. So it's just understanding what those pros and cons are. There's an area that that we like a lot that you typically have to work through an advisor for. So this is something we use with our clients, and that's professionally managed private real estate. So that would be portfolios that are managed by professional money managers, but the portfolio is not public. So they're owning these large institutional assets, but they're not a publicly traded REIT, if that makes sense. Now that would mean less growth upside there because it's not tied to the stock market, but then less downside risk. And that's an area, a lot of our clients come to us and say, hey, I'm done with trying to make as much growth as possible, and I want to just try and keep it as safe as possible and then generate some money to live off of. So that would be an example of kind of a third way that could be done as well.
Okay. So staying on the real estate topic, and you mentioned 2008, like, what are your thoughts on the current housing market? I here in Austin, Texas, I've looked at some stuff, and the housing market is just insane. Like, yeah. Houses will get 20 offers. They'll get offers 100K above asking price. Like, it's just, I don't know. It seems like it's an absolute, like, just zoo here. It's crazy. So I guess, what are your thoughts on the housing market in general? Do you think we're in a bubble?
I think you are 100% right that insane is the best term to use to describe the housing market. And of course, that varies based on geography, right? We are seeing the same thing. I've lived here 18 years in South Carolina. It is a very conservative, slow growth type of area. So you typically don't see these wild swings, and we're seeing that too. I don't know that I would call it a bubble, but it is bubbly. If I'm hedging my bets, there are very clear signs that is completely irrational. To your point, we see the same thing: 20 offers on a property. I had a friend, a client tell me about a friend of theirs that had a property on the coast of South Carolina. They were listing it for $1.2 million. They had two bidders get involved. It ended up selling for $2.1 million. So almost double, which is
insane. Gosh.
Which you can look at South Carolina real estate and own a property for 20 years and not have the value double, right? So it's outrageous. But, it's always about understanding the markets, right? I mean, you have... not only probably Austin is obviously a very appealing area, but now it's from my understanding, you have a lot of people from out of the area that are wanting to move there, right? So it's creating a supply and demand imbalance. How long does that last, and does that stop? That's one big question. The other thing, I'm not an expert in this, but I believe some of the real estate people we follow think that on the residential side, there's some kind of forgiveness of people that are behind on loan payments or on rent payments. So when that ends, that could create a change in the supply and demand, because now there might be a lot of new properties that come on the market. So that's going to be interesting to watch, I think. And if you are thinking about buying right now and you're trying to look for a good deal, I don't know how you do that in your market right now. It seems like it's impossible, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I need to team up with like a realtor and maybe kind of just see some properties in person and maybe get a better gauge for the market. But just looking on Zillow, I would say is, what's the best word I can use? Disheartening, I would say. It's like, I don't want like a big expensive house. Like I would love to have like a cheap kind of fixer upper.
Yeah.
Can work on it with my dad, get it fixed up, like live there. But it's like, I don't want to spend, $300,000-$400,000 for a fixer upper on a house that needs a lot of work. Right. So it's just ridiculous, I would say.
Well, and the thing I would add to that is, one of the things I've learned in, my adult life is that there's going to be in a society like ours, there's going to be cycles, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. The thing none of us can figure out is where exactly are we? And you just don't want to be on that upswing right at near the top when you jump in, because that's going to be painful. And I will say, now I've been doing this my whole adult life. I think I'm pretty smart about finance stuff, but I actually bought my home on the downswing in 08 and 09. And I thought I was a genius, but it was still going and it kept going down. So it's, I mean, there's no way anyone who tells you they know the perfect time is obviously fooling all of us or just, you know, just talking and not, right. not actually doing it.
Right.
But yeah, that would be, there's a beautiful lake area near us. And my wife and I always joke about getting out there. And I said, well, not in a million years would I even look right now. Like you said, it'd be very disheartening. But I said, you never know when that next cycle comes around. And, you know, maybe that's the time to go for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Never know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit. How about, I know you talk about it. How about like tax optimization? What are maybe some things that you see people doing or that you work with clients on to kind of help optimize on taxes and not pay more than they need to?
Yeah, no, I think that's an awesome topic, especially what we were talking about with the government debt right now. Again, I try not to make predictions, but I just don't know how tax rates can't go up in the future. So I think we all need to be thinking about it, right? The idea that I love to talk about here is kind of the three tax buckets. So basically, if you save a dollar, you have three options of where to put that. So the first place would be a taxable account. So literally you make some money, you throw it in the bank or you invest it. And again, it could be in whatever Bitcoin or, you know, the stock market or something like that. And then, so in a taxable account, you'll get a 1099 on any gains that year, right? So if you have a brokerage account or, you know, let's say you put some money in the bank and they pay you 0.01% and you get a 1099 for 2 cents of interest right now because they don't pay anything. So that's kind of the standard starting point. Then back in the 70s and 80s, what became very popular would be tax deferred. So that would be a traditional IRA or a 401k. And that's where the baby boom generation has saved most of their money. And we see people that, you know, maybe over the course of 40 years, they might have accumulated $500,000, $1 million, $2 million in those types of accounts. And they were told, defer your taxes while you're working. And then when you're retired, you'll be in a lower tax bracket. So you can take that money out. Hopefully that's true for them. But what they're worried about now is, wait a second, tax rates go up. Now it's a bad deal, right?
Yeah.
And then the third way would be tax-free. So generally, the most common example there would be a Roth IRA. Or if, you know, if people have an employer, they could have a Roth 401k. So that means you don't get any tax break now, but it's going to grow tax-free over time. And so our whole thing is, this is where we always preach. We want to share information, but the reality is each of us are different and each of our goals are different. So how do you spread out your money among those three? That's ultimately the question. I think probably if you and I were talking 10 or 15 years ago, I would have probably said, more tax deferred makes sense. Now tax deferred scares the daylights out of me.
right.
You know, we try to read and study and talk to experts, and there are tax experts that say we're on a trajectory right now that's almost unsolvable. And they think in, you know, 10 or 15 years that tax rates may have to be double what they are right now, which is crazy to think about. But I mean, for any of us to think about that, the last thing you'd want to do is just defer all of your money until later and then just be getting hammered in taxes when you take it out. So I think being thoughtful about each of those three is kind of that first step, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. That is scary to think about if tax rates double. Yeah.
See why we talk about villains?
Yeah, there's definitely some villains out there. So Roth IRA, that's the only like tax free. You would more like at the current climate, you would push a little bit more and kind of have a majority towards that.
I think so. I think for most people that makes the most sense. You know, you have a lot of flexibility of when to take the money out of a Roth IRA. So if you want to be enjoying your life prior, you know, with a traditional IRA, you're kind of stuck to that 59 and a half rule, as crazy as that age is. I don't know who decided that. So if you want to live more of a lifestyle where you're enjoying your money at an earlier age, there is a little more flexibility with the Roth IRA. And of course, you have complete flexibility with the regular taxable accounts. The other idea I will throw out, this is probably not for the majority of people, but the only other tax-free option would be some type of permanent life insurance, which most people would say, oh, don't go near that. You know, it's the worst thing in the world. Some of them are, do have a lot of fees to them and they don't make sense, but they're, if they're structured properly, you can push money into a permanent life insurance policy and then essentially borrow the money back from yourself, which makes it tax-free. One of the things I like about that, and by the way, I think we live in the greatest country in the world and I love America, so I'm not trying to bash on it. I'm just concerned about the financial future. One of the things I like about the life insurance option is it provides what we call legislative protection, in the sense that we think Roth IRAs are really attractive and appealing right now. But that's something that's made up by the by our government. And so someday they could say, well, we're getting rid of those. You know, I mean, there's nothing that says it's part of the Constitution that we have the option of Roth IRAs. You know what I mean? So so I think that that's just one of those things that and I hope I'm not being too much of a downer today. It's just all of these things that we're always thinking about. How do we diversify your finances? How do we diversify your risks and just be aware of the risks and try and protect yourself from them?
No, I don't think it's being a downer. I appreciate your insight on it. I think it's important things to think about, right? Especially just in the current climate and talking about, you know, the markets do go in cycles, right? So just being aware of current conditions and planning for the future, right?
Absolutely.
Pat, we were kind of talking about it a little bit before we hit record, but just in general, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early, and then have you worked with any clients that had any very, you know, aggressive goals of retiring early?
Yeah, I don't remember how long ago I heard about the FIRE movement, but my whole thing is when I was trained coming right out of college, they said, your job is to help people accomplish their financial goals. And somewhere along the way, most financial advisors forget that. And what they want people to do is save and accumulate as much money as possible so they can charge a fee on it. And they don't want them to ever use it. our whole thing is, let's figure out what you want to do with your life and let's help you do it. So we love having people spend their money and enjoy their money. The older we all get, the more we sadly have met someone who lived and saved but never got to enjoy it, whether they passed away or they had bad health, right? So I think that I love the idea and I love that people are living their lives. Of course, on the financial end, I want to make sure they don't end up older and destitute because they spent too much too fast, right? So, and that's what I always say. There's a perfect balance there somewhere of living your life, but also not being crazy and foolish with your money. And that's the thing we'd always love to help people accomplish. I will say, as far as who we've worked with, we have seen a wide range. We have seen people that say, you know what, I am much more interested in having a simple lifestyle, but having freedom and retiring much earlier. And we also have people that end up, they just end up enjoying their work. And so they end up working longer than they need to. So that's kind of an interesting insight into, obviously it depends on what we all end up doing with our lives and what our interests are. But that's what makes it fun for me. It'd be really boring if everyone was the same, right? So we all are very different as far as what we're trying to do and accomplish.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be good to break it up. Everyone has different goals and yeah, different lifestyles and spending levels and everything. Yeah. So,
and it changes during our lives, right? I'm sure.
Yeah.
What you've wanted to do, it comes and goes, and maybe in different years or different days or hours of the day, right? We all have different things we want to accomplish. That's what makes life interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely am not as a minimalist after moving back to Austin here. So I need to, once I get back out on the road, I'm sure I'll pare it down and be more minimalist.
Yeah.
Cool. One last quick investing question. Cryptocurrency. What are your thoughts?
So I am a registered advisor, so I'm technically not supposed to give advice on cryptocurrency. So I will say, I am fascinated by it. I do not have any of my own savings and investments in it because I'm also terrified by it. So it is, I think there's a 50-50 chance that the governments around the world start cracking down. because the governments have a vested interest in their money being what's the most valuable. And there's another 50% chance that I'm a complete moron and it goes to the moon and I miss out on the whole thing. So I think it's one of those things where the point I should make is just understanding it's technically speaking, an investment is not intended to be so speculative. So I would say it's a speculation because of the volatility, and that's okay as long as someone goes into it understanding that. But something that can go up or down as much as it does is a speculation. And so get in on the right cycle. I guess that would be the goal, obviously.
Right. That's a good summary. And I would say I'm in the same boat. Like I agree with what you said. I don't personally have any of my investments or assets in cryptocurrency, and I kind of see it same way as 50-50.
Yeah.
The governments, they have a good system that seems to be working for them. I don't know why they're going to go with this money on the internet here.
Right.
But maybe I could be totally wrong and I'm missing it and it's going to the moon or whatever. So yeah,
I believe in capitalism and technology and innovation, which very much cryptocurrency is that. But you have the governments need their money to be what we use for transactions, number one. And number two, you know, the unfortunate part of cryptocurrency is it facilitates illegal activity as well. And that's not a good thing. And, you know, where does that go as far as, you know, enforcement and things like that? So yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Pat, this has been a lot of fun. One more question for you here. What is a daily habit or routine that you've implemented in your life that, you know, helps you be happy, healthy, successful, all the above? Could be anything.
Wow, that's really good. I think that for me, it is as much as possible, 99% of the time, maybe I'm not that good at it, trying to start the day with some type of gratitude practice. I think that life, as much as I love life, it can be very hard. And we can have financial problems, we can have personal problems, and, you know, family problems and all those kinds of things. And having some type of gratitude, that doesn't have to be faith-based. It is for me. Just having something to remind myself of all the blessings I do have, that just keeps it in perspective. And I wish I did that literally every day, to your point of daily rituals. But it's one of those things that I miss it when I step away from it. And so that's a good reminder.
Definitely. I think that's a great one. And a great way to end the episode here. Pat, again, thank you. If people want to connect with you, they want to learn more about you, where's the best place that they can find you at online?
Yeah, so the books are on Amazon, Save Your Retirement and The Retirement Secret. And then our planning website is scpreservation.com, which is SC for South Carolina. The easier one is you can use retirewithpat.com. So all of those areas. We do put the radio show on podcast format too, so you can find us there too. So we'd love to have people come check us out. And if you have questions, just reach out to us.
Awesome. Yeah, I will link all those up in the show notes. Cool. Pat, thanks so much.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Nomad on Fire podcast. If you like the show, if you could do us a huge favor, and please subscribe on whatever platform that you're using to listen to this. If you could also leave a 5-star review, that would really help us out and allow the show to be available to more people. See you next time on the Nomad on Fire podcast.